Good morning.
I'm really sorry I switched mics, but you're all good. Oh, thank you, Mark. I am so glad that you have decided to join us for worship this morning, and I'm really happy that you chose to be here at Bethesda to listen for God's voice and to hear from our youth and to really listen for the call that He's placed on each of our lives, because I think sometimes we're not hearing, we're not always listening. The Bible, I know we're coming out of Matthew and 1 Peter today, but I want to take you back to the beginning. I want to take you back to the beginning of our story, because the Bible starts out with a pretty profound story, and I never thought of the book of Genesis in this way until I read an article a couple weeks ago written by a rabbi, and it was one of those, he was a contributing writer, and he was teaching on Genesis, and I stumbled upon this article just when I was on the internet, and it just offered a really neat perspective. The first story we're given in the Bible, in this book of Genesis, is of a God who cannot bear to be alone any longer. Like a God who, I don't know if you ever thought about the book of Genesis like that, that He created this world because He could not bear to be alone any longer. He's driven by love to create a world of cascading diversity, in which God, because He's thrilled with each new creation, says, "This is good." And then God creates Adam and Eve with the same capacity to look at diversity and says, "This is good too." And Adam and Eve say, "This is good." They look out into the world that God has gifted to them and say, "This is good." So in Genesis, God teaches us an unearned love that can only be made real when it is given away to someone else. And so without obligation, God creates this diverse and flowering universe because God cannot be God if He doesn't love, because God is love. We're made in His image, called to celebrate difference, to see divinity in each other, and to be delighted and thrilled by what we are seeing. That is, says the Bible, our most godlike attribute. Wow, when I heard this side of Genesis, when I read how He was looking at it from this really unique perspective, I don't know if y'all have heard it that way, but this was the first time I had stepped back and looked at Genesis through someone else's eyes instead of just the creation story. It seems very simple, but, I mean, it's very profound that God was like, "I cannot bear to be alone any longer." And He creates this world, gifts it to us, and says, "This is good, and these who I've created are good as well." And then gives us the capacity to look at it, because we're made in His image, for us to be able to say, this is good. We like this. So, I couldn't help but think that this is something I'm telling our students and our children a lot. That God crafted us in His image. I don't know how many times I've told them that. That we're supposed to go out into the world and show God's love to other people because we're made like Him. But alas, that's not always the easiest thing to do, especially when you're a teenager and the world seems to be calling you in a billion different directions. And after Genesis, after this story, we move into Matthew and 1 Peter a long way down the road, but we move into the times of Jesus. And that's exactly what Jesus calls us to do, the same thing that God called us to do in the very beginning, to love, to include, to seek out everyone in His name and tell them who God is, and to see this divinity in one another. I'm not sure how many of you might know this, but I grew up downtown when I was in middle and high school, and I lived in the historic district. It was just about a block or two from the hustle and bustle of this ever-growing downtown Greenville. And my home had a wraparound porch, a big wraparound porch. And we often found ourselves porch sitting when we were, during the week. Sometimes if it was nice weather, we would share a meal on the porch, have dinner out there. Or we would look out into the neighborhood and just kind of see what was going on. And we loved living this front porch life. So when the weather was good, or even when the rain was falling, I love sitting outside in the rain when the rain was falling, we would grab some lemonade or some sweet tea, and we would go watch sunsets on Friday evenings, or we would listen for the fireworks at the Greenville Drive Stadium. And we sat atop our steps on Halloween as very eager trick-or-treaters would bound up for their spoils to get maybe some awesome candy, and we would watch our neighbors as they walked their dogs or went for a jog. And sometimes they would see us on the porch. We'd be listening to music or drinking sweet tea, and they would stop to take a break. And they would walk right up the steps to be in community with us. Many visitors to our porch came without a specific invitation. And though we had a lot of dinner parties and we had social gatherings that led people to 326, Hampton And while I hear all the time that Bethesda is a church family that has many open seats and we're inviting and we love, especially when we get new people, we love new people, I fear that as a global church, as just God's people, we're losing sight of our front porch mentality. The Methodist Church is rooted historically in the front porch. I've talked to our confirmants about this, that we want to be a front porch church. We want to go out into the community. We don't want to just like leave our doors shut and like hope that people show up on Sunday mornings. And in the South, we know hospitality very well, and we think we're great at executing it. We're masters at executing it, at having parties and being welcoming, good hostesses, and we do believe in big front porches. It's right there in the motto, in the open hearts, open minds, open doors, that that's the way the United Methodist Church is supposed to be. And while I'm talking about front porches, this is what I mean, because this is not my idea. Our district superintendent, Susan Leonard Ray, who's worshiping with us here this morning, I heard her first plant this seed about front porches. And she came and talked about front porch living and that we're called to live this way as Christians and as Methodists. And the big houses that you see on these historic streets, the old houses you see in neighborhoods, those that are typically built before the 20th century, they don gigantic outdoor living spaces. Welcoming porches that invite neighbors up to come upstairs and have a conversation or a glass of sweet tea. Moments happen on front porches that connect us to other people. And I think that's what their true purpose is. When you're sitting on front porch, it's an open invitation to come up and be in community with other people. But now we build a lot of houses that have back porches, that have back decks. And I think that they serve the opposite purpose. These porches that you're seeing on the back of people's houses in modern neighborhoods or subdivisions are porches of exclusivity, not inclusiveness. I think that we're scared sometimes of front porch living because it requires us to just be there and allow whoever's coming to come rather than maybe having a specific invitation to grill out in the backyard, or it's very intrusive to live an exclusive life. And since the front porch is rooted in our Methodist history of living for Jesus, I think that we've got to reach further. We have to reach further than greeters. We have to reach further than our passing of the peace that we love so much. We have to reach into school lunchrooms, our kids do, into school lunchrooms where they have the opportunity to serve each other and to talk to people who might be scared to journey up the front porch on their own. They just want someone to go with them. We've got to permeate our communities through active service of others. And we're pretty good at that. We had a family promise here this week, so we had a family staying with us, and we served them, I think, pretty daggone well. We're good at, we go to Salkehatchee, we raise money for, we're going to Hilton Head to do service. But I want us to think not just in, checking off a list of these are the things we can do. I want us to really step back and think about the front porch mentality. We've got to go out into the world to be the hands and feet of Jesus because he's back up there and we're here. And it's vital, I think, to our well-being and to play this vital role in the world, in the church. People ask me all the time why I'm always at my students' events. And it's true. I spend a lot of my afternoons on soccer fields or in concert halls or picking up carpool or going for coffee with my students. And I'm not doing all of that because I just am, like, desperately in need of practice to be a soccer mom one day. That's not what I do. Although, hey, I'll be a soccer mom. I think I've probably got a little bit of experience to be cut out for that. But I do it because I believe in doing life with my students. And I know that when I spend time investing within them beyond these walls, that they're going to want to show up here, not be dragged through the door. They're going to want to serve. Because I'm serving them with just friendship, with being the person who goes down my front porch to them, to the soccer field where I don't know anybody until I go for a couple of times and then people start to recognize me. And I know that there's not a measurable level of comfort that comes with that, that reaching out and living a life that promotes inclusiveness, it opens us up to a lot. It opens us up to judgment, to possibly sacrifice. We have to give of ourselves, to suffering maybe. We get shut down all the time. Maybe you invite someone to church and they're like, nah, it's okay. So we get shut down a lot. But isn't that the life that Jesus chose for himself? I want us to think about that. That Jesus was born into a stable instead of a palace. He was living the life of a commoner rather than of a king. He traveled on foot to the farthest corners of his world that anyone, someone, Jesus, yeah. But I'm going to go out into the world and serve these people. And the church, if you'll remember, all these stories in here are built on broken people, on people who are diverse, who have all these different backgrounds, coming together to worship the one they had in common. Because sometimes the one that they had in common was all that they had. They were very different. They came from different backgrounds, just like we come from different backgrounds. And the minor differences among them couldn't compare to the joy God was giving them and the grace God was giving them that kept calling them back in community with one another. But the problem with the church, even back then, you see it's written in our history and our stories, is that we didn't always listen to Jesus collectively. The church throughout history has been full of people who will serve Jesus with reckless abandon, who will go out and live this call that God has placed on their lives, but it's just a handful. It's not the majority of people doing this. And I think we've been unable for the past 2,000 years or so to come together collectively to be the church God's called us to be. Like Bailey said in her prayer, you help make us the church you're calling us to be. And here's what we've done. We've made different denominations because we can't agree to disagree on things, and we've made different laws, and we all have different opinions, and we're going to have those. We're going to have them. Because we're human, because our humanity gets in the way of our understanding of eternity and of God. And since we lack the understanding that God has, and that, I mean, but that makes sense, we lack the understanding God has, because if we knew what he knows, we'd have no reason for him. We'd have no reason to cling to him, need him, to serve this greater force, this greater being. And if a few weeks ago, I had this great epiphany, this like, man, I need God. I was sitting on my bathroom floor. I was sitting there. I don't know. I like bathroom floors sometimes because they're cold. I was sitting on the bathroom floor, and I was having a flare-up with my Crohn's disease. And I sat there thinking, gosh, if I could just know ahead of time that it's going to be a bad day, that I'm going to have a tough day. And I know we all have days that are like, man, this was just supposed to be a Tuesday. But it becomes this, like, it just things just snowball and snowball. And I sat on the bathroom floor, and I was like, if I just known today was going to be this day, I wouldn't have scheduled all those meetings, and I wouldn't have told a student I could meet with them after school, and I wouldn't have so many interruptions to what I want to do, to what I need to get done. But needing to be fully reliant on Christ for every moment, those that are filled with anxiety and frustration with my digestive system, as well as moments where I feel so entrenched in his love and in his grace, I need all these moments that he's gifted to me. Because these moments, though they may not seem to connect when I look at each one individually, they have a connection that keeps our humanity, like our humanity keeps us from recognizing these connections sometimes. And like we can't foresee everything because we're not God. But God uses all of these moments that he's gifted to shape the journey, and we have to be willing to take these moments, harness them for his glory, and go out beyond the church walls and serve others. I can't tell you how many people and students that I've met, 4 years ago, when I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, I guarantee you I was like, this is just lonely me. I'm the only one who has this. I'm the only one who suffers. I've met so many people that because of what I have, I share a connection with them, and it offers support, and it offers community and fellowship sometimes where we go and we laugh about the problems that we have. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, to build connections. And we're building a front porch using these moments, using these experiences. We can help reach people with what's in 1 Peter, these gifts that God's bestowed upon us, the things that make us up what we are and who he's called us to be. And he calls us to serve. We know that when you join the church, we ask you all of these things, and we say, will you serve the church? Will you give back to the church with your prayers, your presence, your gifts, your service? Service is right. It's built in. It's right. And I don't want us to forget that the things that we say and hear are divine. They are so important. And when we walk out the doors, if you've said you're going to serve and then you don't serve, you don't want to do that. So we want to remember that we've been called to serve, and we do that pretty well. We serve with organizations like the Dream Center, like Reach, Meals on Wheels, Salkehatchie. We go on mission trips. We serve locally at the soup kitchen, or I know parents who give up their time to go volunteer at the schools. We do a lot, calls us to serve just as Jesus did. Using these experiences, knowing Jesus found a way to relate to everyone he encountered, whether they were an adulteress, a tax collector, homeless, a slave, a religious leader, these marginalized members of society, he found a way to connect with each one of them. And we've got to get our lack of holiness, that we aren't fully, we're not God, we have to get that to take a back seat to our love and to grace and to building bridges with people and building front porches that allow us to go out. Is that easy? No. No, absolutely not. But I can tell you that I've met a lot of my friends, a lot of my really good friends, via first very awkward conversations. I have a lot of friends who, it was very awkward when we first met, but now we're the best of friends. When I came here, Rainey and I didn't know anybody, basically. We didn't know anybody. And now I feel like you guys are my family. But that doesn't happen overnight. No crying. Sorry. But it doesn't happen overnight. These connections that we build, they take time, and each individual connection is different sometimes than the one before it. So we need to think like Jesus, be like Jesus, and say, I'm going to make the effort to build a bridge, to build the front porch, and encounter other people for God. I'm going to do it so that they may know of God. So Jesus in Matthew, he says, I came to serve other people. I came to live this life, not to be served, even though I'm a king, but to serve other people and to serve as the ultimate gift, to lay down my life that others might go and also serve. That's the whole point. And I think that right now, these days, that it's scandalous to be selfless. It's scandalous to be open and vulnerable to another person, but that's what Jesus did. He lived and loved a very scandalous life of going beyond the status quo and simply says, can y'all do the same? Can you do what I've showed you, that I've lived this life, and I want you to follow that? And we need to know, if we know about love, most of us know love, we know what love is, we have to be love. Like God is love, we should be love. And this is what we know love. We know love is not flighty, we know it's not fickle. Any of you who have loved know it's resilient. Love is resilient and it's persistent and it's determined and irrepressible. And we have to let everyone know that the one who created all of us special and different delights in difference. He created a diverse world in the very beginning. And he sees all of us as these flowers of divinity, each of us special and precious. And I feel like I'm telling students this very often, that we live a life where things and status matter. So when I say things, often they'll raise their hands and say, I get it, and that's great, but that's really hard. Talking it and doing it are very different things. And we're living lives that are so fixed on here and now that we're not looking at eternity. We're not focusing on eternity. So if we change the way we relate to other people, we have to love and encourage and serve other people. Because if we don't, the church is going to become what a lot of people say it is. It's going to be a place full of hypocritical people who say they love a God who is love, but his followers won't love others. And we don't want to build a back porch. We want to live a life that's rooted in love, connected to one another. Those are lives that are really well lived when we love other people. And we know of God's love, so we should share it, because not everybody knows God's love. I went to Salkahatchee the first time when I was 14, and I went to Bennettsville, and these were my goals. I was going to take really cool pictures of me holding tools, because all my friends were like, she's going to go build something. So I was like, pictures. I went shopping for t-shirts. What? You're supposed to bring t-shirts to camera. But I was like, I need to have cool t-shirts. Went and got t-shirts I could take with me and hoped possibly I might meet a cute boy while I was there. So that was the t-shirts. Meet the t-shirts, meet the cute boy, pictures. Pictures or it didn't happen. So I needed pictures. That was what I thought. So I went to Bennettsville and I never imagined that God, because he loved me, would ask me to let down all of my guards, probably multiple, it wasn't even just one, and talk to a little girl who lived in the home that I was serving. And she was scared of living in her own house. She talked to me about how she was scared the roof might fall in. She said, said, I want you to love this girl, not get on this roof and take pictures. And I thought, man, that seems pretty worthless. Like, I came here to build, I came here to do. And I didn't feel like that was doing. I don't know if that makes sense. I was like, I'm not here to play with a little girl. I do that at home, I do that at church. Like, I'm here to build, I'm here to make, I'm here to fix. And God was like, this is how you're gonna fix. This is how you're gonna build. And so when I was 14, I built my very first front porch. Not a real front porch, but this front porch between me and a little girl who needed me more than I needed to be on a roof. And God orchestrated moments while I was with her, moments that because I was being obedient and I was listening, not hearing, because listening requires a response. I was listening to God as she sat in my lap and we picked dandelions and we blew them in people's faces and we swept everything they made. We would sweep and clean up, things that we could do together. And I shared stories with her from the Bible because I didn't really know what else to do. And I was like, well, I know these. I've got these. So I was telling her these stories and she thought some of them were so funny, like they came straight out of a book. And luckily they do. They come out of a book. And God gave us the Bible so that we could share his love and his grace and stories of those who have come before us when we feel ill-equipped or at a loss for words. Because we're meant to serve everyone. We're meant to love everyone as the church through building these front porches and establishing a community. So this is what I tell my students a lot. Not because I think they're doing this incorrectly, but because this is something that their world, it makes sense to do this. So I say, the casting out other people, it's got to stop. It can't happen. The bullying, the gossip, the letting other people sit alone, do life alone, it can't happen. Not if we want to be the church that we've been called to be. And geez, I think that rings true for all of us. Not just the students that we're quick to make snap judgments, we're quick to overthink, and that mentality is not of God, because God doesn't do that. People often say that the children in the church, or the children in the youth, are the church of tomorrow. They're the future of the church. But I think they're the church of right now. They're the church that knows how to love. Sometimes they mess up at it, but our little ones, they run down these aisles and they give big hugs. And they talk about Jesus, and they point out the crosses on your shirts and say, Jesus. And they know, and they're vocal, they're public with their profession. And our students, they know how to serve other people. They go on these trips not because they want to take pictures, although I will take their picture because I'm like, Jesus. They don't do that for the pictures. They do it because they're like, I could sit on my couch and look around all week because I'm very tired, and they're busy, and they're overscheduled, and they want to do everything. They can sit at home, but they're not going to. Because they know, and I've taught them, you've got to be the church of right now. Because if they're not the church of right now, we won't have a church tomorrow. We need people who are going to help us build the foundation. So this motto of the United Methodist Church, open hearts, open minds, open doors, goes back to what God created the church to be. A place of understanding, of inclusivity and love. And we're not called to just unlock the doors of the church and hope someone will turn the handle to come in. We're called to hold the door open, or even better yet, put a door stopper in the door and go out. Leave it open and you go out instead of holding it open. When we do this, we're using the God-given gifts from 1 Peter, and we're serving like in Mark. We have to know that God's going to fill the gaps of our humanity when we're reaching out to others, because when we build porches on the front with open hearts, God is going to work in us that we might know and grow closer to him as well as each other. I heard a song the other day about Jesus from a very unlikely source, a source that probably our students are much more familiar with than adults. It's by this guy named Ed Sheeran. And Ed is usually on the radio for his pop ballads, but this time in his new album he just released, he was singing in this particular song about the passing of his mother. And he says two key things that I think encapsulate what God has for us if we will live the life we're supposed to live. Sheeran says this. He says, a life that's filled with love is a life that has been truly lived. And a heart that's been broken for someone else is a heart that's felt loved. May our hearts break for those who don't know Jesus or don't feel like the church's front porch is big enough. will do our best. We won't be perfect, but we'll do our best to use the gifts we've been given and the experiences we've lived through to serve other people. Let's see the divinity in one another instead of the difference, and fill our porch with wide floorboards and hang up ferns and rocking chairs, not just a few, but many seats.